Hello, everyone, and welcome to our one-night show. Just take a seat. They're always free. This is Every Pod You Cast, a podcast dedicated to the rock band The Police. My name is Justin Mancini. I am one of your co-hosts here. You may know me from the Cinema Joes podcast, but you also may know me from Pod on the Rooftops, a podcast dedicated to the rock band Genesis, as well as Podwork Angels The Rush Hour, a podcast dedicated to the rock band Rush. And joining me, one of my co-hosts from Podwork Angels, Chris Mancini. Hello, Chris.
Hello. How's it going?
Going okay. I'm really excited for this episode. I'm sure the three of us are. So I should probably introduce our third co-host on this podcast. He is a music enthusiast. It's Randy Elaine. Hello, Randy.
It's great to see you. Yep, I'm looking at a note page here I've constructed to make this feel as much like homework as possible. I'm ready and raring to go. I hope I've got some fun stuff tonight.
Judging by the last episode, I'm sure that's definitely going to be the case. So if it's not clear already, this is a podcast for The Police. We actually are discussing each of The Police's five albums, discussing our overall thoughts on that album, songs we like, songs we don't, favorite lyrics, and favorite musical moments. And today, we are tackling The Police's sophomore effort, Regatta de Blanc, from 1979. So, as I like to do, offer a little bit of history about the making of this album and about the band in general. The last that we left this band, they had just put out Atlando's D'Amour. And while this is an album that did pretty slow sales initially, sales would start to increase as there was more success with the singles they'd put out from that album, as well as the relentless touring that they were doing, thanks to their own work ethic, but also the efforts of Miles Copeland, their manager. So they were gaining a lot of traction in the States, especially at this point. And part of it was actually due to the fact that while they had sort of a punk-ish sound, they were, let's say, a little more accessible than a lot of the other punk bands of the time. I remember reading like an interview with a concert promoter in the United States talking about how, you know, The Police looked like they showered once in a while. Just the leg up on hygiene, I think, helped them. But they were starting to have better reception than a lot of the bands that they were actually opening for at this point, to the ire of those bands, especially because a lot of these were actual punk bands who didn't appreciate these sort of would-be punk bands that were trying to come up in the ranks. While they're doing this, they basically record Regatta de Blanc in about 4 weeks, but this is spaced out over months. So they actually start in late 1978 and then record through 1979. And they're working with Nigel Gray this time. But they are recording at the same studio as Atlando's D'Amour at Surrey Sound once again. And part of the reason for this is because they want to retain control over their music. They do it at a budget. The record company was going to give them more, but they wanted to save that so they could have more creative control over the process. And unlike with Outlandos, they have fewer songs to start before they go into the recording studio. And because of that, they're actually starting to recycle older material, pre-Police material. There's a couple of songs maybe we'll get into. There's parts that are recycled from old Last Exit songs, the band that Sting was in before The Police. There's a couple that were made when like Stewart was in high school. So they really are pulling from a lot of different places. And of course, there's a lot of improvisation going on in the studio as they're making this album. But let's get into that album, shall we? Regatta de Blanc roughly translates to white reggae. Will be associated with the band pretty much for the rest of their career. And this is a pretty successful album. It's generally regarded as one of their best, if not their best. But I'm curious what my co-hosts think of it. So, Chris, I'm going to start with you this time. What are your thoughts on Regatta de Blanc?
Yeah, I really like this album a lot. Coming into it, it was definitely an album that I was looking forward to. And listening to it didn't disappoint. In fact, it just, you know, made me like it even more. So, it's going to be a hard act to follow, but I know they do have a lot of good songs coming up. But for now, really happy with this album. I feel like some of the things that I felt like they were still kind of thinking through, they kind of fleshed out a little bit more between the last album to this album. I feel like they really let Summers, spread his wings a little bit. I felt like in some songs on the last album, you know, maybe he was still a bit more like controlled, or at least like, you know, a little more temper than I feel like he got a lot more creative on this album with some of the things that he was doing. And then Copeland's drums really stood out to me for this album as well. Some crazy stuff he's doing in there. I'm sure we'll get into some of that when we talk about specific songs, but it like he has such a distinctive sound, like really impressive. Like I feel like, you know, he was keeping up with like different polyrhythms throughout, and he really good at creating the right tone and atmosphere, and he even, you know, had some input and even played some different instruments on this album too. So really good for them to shine. And then, you know, Sting was also maybe some songs a little flat on, but some interesting vocals on a lot of these songs. And yeah, we'll dive deeper into it, but I do feel like this is a lot stronger than their last album.
Yeah, I had kind of a vague idea of how you felt about this, and I feel like I might have an idea of how Randy feels about this, but Randy, why don't you tell us your thoughts on Regatta de Blanc?
Absolutely. So, you know, as you know, one of my roles on this podcast is to be the newbie coming in, seeing this with fresh eyes. And as obvious and well-known as this is, I had not really thought about the fact that Regatta de Blanc translates roughly to white reggae. And I've got to say, you know, my first response to that is, you know, not the best look when we're talking about, you know, ska and reggae. But again, I'm fairly certain I briefly mentioned this on the last podcast. I've got to give them a little bit of slack on that, right? Because we're coming out of this two-tone movement. There's this whole like rock against racism movement. You've got like white working class and immigrants coming together, bonding over music, sharing these things. Of course, in the 70s and 80s, we're not looking at this with a 2023 lens. So to a certain extent, I'm just kind of happy they brought in these new sounds, like popularized these different types of music that really made the Police stand out. But, you know, titles aside, I'm fairly certain this is my favorite Police album for a few reasons. Number one, I love the fact that this was just kind of built from a box of scraps out of nowhere. They just pieced together this absolute masterpiece. You know, if I were going to take a shot at it, I would agree with Chris. I don't know that there's a Sting vocal that hits me like Roxanne did on the previous album, but we've got some really great stuff. And what we lose there, we make up for in just like some incredible guitar, maybe some of my favorite bass from Sting. There's some good stuff happening in this album. And probably my favorite thing is this is maybe the most new wavy album that we get here. You know, I think Stuart Copeland has solo writing credit on three songs, and he's got one or two more that he's sharing writing credit with Sting. This is like the most that he gets his fingerprints on an album. And I'm realizing he might be my favorite member of the band. So yeah, really excited about this album. I love just the mix of sounds and styles that we get.
Yeah. And I think that is something that really jumped out to me on this these past few listens, I guess, just that they are incorporating a lot more sounds into their catalog. You know, I think without Lando's, I can really hear the punk influence, especially. And what I like about this album is they are putting more sounds in, but they're not dropping the punk altogether. And in fact, there's a couple songs that I would say are very much in that vein. You know, there's one that almost feels like it could be a song on Outlandos D'Amour. And actually, I'm pretty sure it might have been written during that same period. But then there's another one, actually one that Chris mentioned a little bit earlier. Maybe we'll get into that a little bit later. But, you know, It's All Right For You, which is very punk inspired, but also like a little more accessible sound, like a little bit of a soft, not quite as abrasive. So they're really starting to meld some sounds together, which I think is really interesting. Yeah, I think this album's pretty great. I guess we'll see as I, you know, re-listen to the other three albums to see if it's my favorite. But right now, of the two that we've discussed, it's definitely my favorite of those two. I would say most of the songs are either good to great. There's maybe one song that doesn't quite fit in there for me, but everything else is like a pleasure to listen to. Even the songs that maybe are a little bit lesser known, some of them are great and some of them are just like really fun and charming. And that's like, you don't necessarily just want the same thing. You want like a little bit of a, you want some breathing room too. And I think this album is able to give that to you. You know, this is not a sophomore slump by any means, despite, like you said, Randy, that it is seems to be made up of scraps. And that's not completely, like, I think if you listen to this, you'd be like, okay, I can maybe see like a few cases. But I think another part of it is these guys were really talented and could with some really clever stuff in a short amount of time. So I think that's the other part of it.
Hi, I'm Alex Marcus, podcasting director for thepopbreak.com.
I'm Bill Bodkin, Pop Break's editor-in-chief.
And I'm TV columnist Josh Sarnecki. And together, we host
TV Break!
Whether you are looking for a freewheeling discussion on the latest Disney Plus release, an update on the latest season of Bake Off, or what's happening in the tumultuous world of streaming,
stop on by the Pop Break TV podcast feed on the first Monday of every month to join in on the fun. Josh didn't get a second line. I'm sorry, Josh.
Hey, I'm Allie Nelson, and I love romantic thrillers.
And I'm Tyler McCarthy, and I don't know much about romantic thrillers.
Together, we host Not Couple Goals, where we discuss the best and, let's face it, worst in romantic thriller cinema.
We cover classics like Wild Things and Cruel Intentions.
And newer releases like The Boy Next Door and Deepwater.
Sometimes it's just us. Other times, we're joined by great guests, including some of your Pop Break favorites. So, if like me, romantic thrillers are your guilty pleasure,
or you were raised on Lifetime movies like me, join us every other Thursday on the Pop Break Today feed.
Yeah, I'm glad everyone is a fan of this. I guess we can get into our individual categories where we run through individual songs on the album. I know the challenge for me is thinking like, oh man, there's so many songs to discuss. I really hope we don't overlap. So we're going to start with Love You Since I Knew You. These are songs that we think are either underrated or just songs we like and want to talk about. So I'm going to go back to Randy to start us off. One what song did you want to spotlight? What's the song that you loved since you knew it?
Okay, I think I was secretly hoping to go last here so I could try to mix it up, because you may not be hearing the last from me on this song, because I love it so much. I'm curious to hear what you guys think about it, because I don't think it's the most classic police sounding song, but it's the one I find myself wanting to play over and over again. It's very much my vibe. I think it's maybe the new waviest of the songs. And that is On Any Other Day. I love this song. I love the lyrics. I love how weird it is. I feel like they could be hanging out with the Talking Heads and they might be giants. And they would just all be digging on these lyrics together. It's just so fun. It's been stuck in my head for about the last month. Every time I go to listen to The Police, I play it again, because I think it captured my personal spirit and vibe and energy. You know, I've got a very close second place that I'll bring up later if I don't hear it from you guys. That's a little bit more of a traditional Police offering. But yeah, I'm going to follow my heart. It's On Any Other Day. I cannot wait to hear what you guys think about that pick.
I will have something a little bit. I'll have a few things to say about a little late. Maybe a little sooner than we might think. But Chris, did you have any thoughts on this song at the moment?
Yeah, I don't love like the singing in it, but I do like a lot of the instrumentation in it. I really think the guitar riff is really catchy during the chorus, and then a really nice bass line throughout. I definitely think it definitely has some really good qualities to it, but yeah, I don't think I would pick it as, I don't think it would be on my short list, but I also, you know, I think it has a lot of positive qualities in it too. And just like on the last album, I still, you know, enjoy the moments where they're silly, and, you know, I think it's, it's pretty funny, like the punchline of, and it would be okay on any other day. So yeah, it at least makes me smile when I hear it.
I think another thing I love about it is it's like a little bit of that connective tissue back to the previous album, where they feel like kids. We've got a little bit of that Born in the 50s vibe. You know, they're in their 20s, or, you know, I think Andy's hit his 30s at this point in time. And just this idea of trying to imagine what it's like to be this like just kind of sad middle-aged person going through the motions and being depressed, and like a young person's sense of what that's going to look and feel like, you know, knowing it's not too far off in their future. I would love to know what was going through Andy's head in particular during this song, you know, when he was listening to it. Because I bet it hit differently for him just having another 10 years on these guys. But yeah, I just love that sort of youthful, fun energy. And yeah, like I said, I love the band They Might Be Giants. And I found myself thinking of one of their songs called Dead when I was listening to the song. And, you know, it's just it's in that vein of like the that sort of like ennui, disillusioned with life. You know, this whole sort of stale existence in front of us, and we're trying so hard to fight back against it with our weird music. But yeah, so you may not have heard the last from me on this one, I've got some thoughts on some more traditional Police offerings here as well. I can't wait to hear what you guys pick.
Yeah, and I mention the sort of punch for those of our listeners who might not have heard this song, the punchline, which actually isn't uttered by the narrator himself, but is sung by other voices singing happy birthday to him. You know, maybe a little bit of a preview, but like this song is going to be interesting to talk about in relation to a certain song on Synchronicity later on. So, you know, that's in the future. But I should just mention that these voices are singing happy birthday. And that is why it's kind of funny, because, yeah, it's quite a day. Let's just say that. So I'm going to go next, and I'm going to pick a different song for my Love You Since I Knew You. And that's The Bed's Too Big Without You. This is one of those songs I remember hearing it for the first time. I'm pretty sure it just really felt like a discovery the first time I heard it. It has this incredibly infectious groove to it, a very dependable bass line from Sting, kind of like almost like chimey sort of guitar, and this really massive drum sound, especially on the cymbal crashes. That really jumped out to me this time. And this time it's about how loneliness is consuming, that it can take over everything. And the music really doesn't radically change throughout the song. And it's one of those things, like on paper, conceptually, I'm looking at it, I'm like, this shouldn't work. Like, this is just kind of a similar vibe the whole time. Like, it's not like really changing, you know, radically at any point. It's not completely the same either. It's these little grooves, little flourishes throughout. I love that Stuart Copeland's drums get bigger on each cymbal crash in the chorus, especially. And this is after the narrator Sting is singing "The Bed's Too Big Without You," cymbal crash, "Bed's Too Big Without You," another cymbal crash. Like, it's almost like reality is hitting him in the face as he's saying it. It's such a great thing, like emotion to represent instrumentally. And yeah, this is just one of those songs that I've always really loved. It's you know, a song, again, that like doesn't change a lot, but somehow never gets boring. It's just a really effective song to me from start to finish. I also love that it fades in and fades out, and I cannot imagine the song any other way. It has to be that way. This is something that's always going to be lurking. I love that, you know, that bit of songwriting from them. So yeah, so that's my pick. But I don't know. Did you guys have any thoughts on that one?
Plus, it has maracas in it.
That's right. I neglected to mention that.
Yeah, I think the guitar part, especially like in between the playing, it almost sounds like flamenco. Like, it makes you want to kind of dance. So really appreciate that kind of color that Andy adds there. I think the other thing is, yeah, definitely feel the longing in Sting's voice, you know, in certain parts of the part, especially when he's like says "without you," and really like draws out the "you" part. Yeah. Also really like the the bass part feels really like there's parts where he's not playing, and then it just kind of like he kind of like rolls it a little bit in parts, and definitely interesting, adds an interesting feel to it. And really like the snappy snare play from Stuart.
I love both of your takes on this song. That observation about the song fading in and fading out, I think is a great one, because it does create this sense that this is just a lingering feeling. It's there all the time. I love what Chris has to say about how dynamic and interesting some of the vocals are. When we said earlier, maybe there weren't as many of those moments that they necessarily jumped out at us. I think those are great things. It's definitely like, if we had like a spectrum of like the vibes on this album, I think we might have just gone from my song to your song, to like the two different vibes, because yeah, like the bed's too big without you. It's one of those like we're in a groove sort of songs. And, you know, I think one of the reasons the Police are so popular is they can do that type of song so well. Those are often some of the most popular tracks, even if they're maybe not the ones that grab me as much. I know they're doing it so well. And there's just so much instrumental creativity happening in there. I really, you know, I don't think I ever would have said this before starting on this podcast adventure with you guys, but this is a band I would love to get in a time machine and see play live, because I know that they would, in every performance, be bringing out like new dimensions. You know, when I was researching some of my favorite musical moments, I was trying to find what live recordings there were, and it was amazing how quickly this jumped up my rankings when I was watching like a live performance and I was seeing everyone on stage, because they're doing some really special stuff here.
But Chris, we need to hear your Love You Since I Knew You, I'm curious to see where you went with this one.
I went with Bring On The Night. Like this song a lot. Really interesting how it starts off with bringing in like the kick drum playing throughout. Also a lot of cymbal work. I think probably the thing that stands out the most to me is the acoustic guitar playing. Feels very mesmerizing, almost like harp-like. So it's really cool that they incorporated that into a song. Definitely has a very reggae groove to it, especially in the chorus. But I think the other interesting thing is kind of stuttering guitar play on both the solo and the outro. Not playing, almost feels like he's playing the same note. Maybe it is the same note, I don't know, but like especially on the solo, just minimal notes that kind of like build out and build onto themselves. And it's a very non-traditional solo and very weird outro, but it's really interesting, kind of the dichotomy between that and like the pretty, you know, steady instrumentation before that. So I like kind of the contrast there. And yeah, like I said, the acoustic guitar is really, you know, really pleasing on the ear. So wasn't the song I thought going in that I would pick, but it really stood out to me on multiple listenings.
Yeah, and this was one of those songs that was actually sort, you know, at least parts of it were cribbed from Last Exit. Kind of interesting. And then so like this, the content of the song is really curious to me, because I just read the lyrics and I'm just thinking like, okay, not really sure what's going on here. But apparently the initial conception of it was inspired by Pontius Pilate. And then eventually, I believe a gentleman who was on death row.
Yeah, Chris, I was thrilled when you picked this, because this was my number two song that I almost went with, because I thought I might just like shock you too much with my love for On Any Other Day. But yeah, this song is so great. And like one thing I've noticed about the Police, you know, I'm looking at these lyrics carefully, as both of you are always doing as well. And, you know, so many of these early songs, we just get these repetitions of a key phrase or a key chorus. And the instrumentals are bringing it to life. And, you know, whatever inspired this song, the lyrics are broad enough that, I mean, it could mean almost anything. You know, I think where I'm at in my life when I hear this song, it's like putting me in that place of almost just, if you've had like a really busy, stressful day, there might be some sort of like relief at night. Or if I'm trying to imagine where the members of the Police might be, if this is resonating with them, You know, I'm thinking of them escaping out into the world and whatever their problems and vices are. There's just something about this that hits me. I think The Bed's Too Big Without You worked really well for Justin because something resonated there. And I think it was the same for me with this Bring On the Night lyric. Even though I love to go abstract, I had never thought Death Row Inmate or Pontius Pilate, but I love that for this song. And I think now I love it even more. So thank you.
Happy to oblige. So guys, let's move on to our King of Pain. These are maybe the songs that we don't like as much. They could even be parts of songs that we don't like as much. But I think I will start this time because unfortunately the song that I went with is On Any Other Day. You know, I gotta be honest, Randy, when you started like in your lead up to what your pick was, I'm like thinking like, wow, what is this gonna be? And like, and if you had like put all the songs in front of me guessing which one it was gonna be, that would have been the one I picked last. I was not totally, you know, totally blindsided. That said, if I'm being totally honest with myself, I don't hate this song. I just feel like for me, it doesn't quite live up to the rest of what's on the album. I do think it is kind of funny. Wish it were a little more clever than it is. That said, you gotta give props to the fact that they acknowledge it's corny right off the bat. But I guess there's a part of me that wishes almost that the things that were happening to this gentleman got progressively worse, like almost like absurd. And it doesn't ever quite get to that point. It actually like kind of gets a little more normal as it goes on. Like, you know, he's just like spilling his tea at the end. Just kind of like, okay, you know, it knows what it is. That's what I'll say about it. It's my least favorite song on the album. It's a similar feeling I have with Sally from the last album, where it's like, you know, it's kind of fun to listen to. It's just not quite on the same level for me as what's around it. So a qualified King of Pain. So Chris, let's go to you next.
The cups and plates are in a conspiracy. That's a great line. Anyway, my King of Pain, don't necessarily, again, similar to you, I don't dislike the song, but there is an aspect of the song that I don't love. So I went No Time This Time for two reasons. And the first being, I'm sorry, but Sting's voice sounds like he's trapped in like a washing machine or something. Because, yeah, it sounds like either he's drowning or just, I don't know. Like, I just don't like his vocals in this part. And I don't know what, you know, filter they applied, but I don't think it sounds very good. And I think there's a lot of good aspects of the song. I love the fast tempo punk feel. I like the nice drum fills that Copeland has. And I thought it was a pretty solid guitar solo in the song. So again, a lot of things I like about the song but Sting's voice kind of ruins it. And then I think the other aspect is I feel like this song feels the most out of place compared to the rest of the songs. And knowing that this song was constructed in 78 before like they really built the rest or, you know, created the rest of the songs makes sense why it kind of stands out the way it does. So given that and given the feel of the album, just a weird song for it to end on. And Sting's voice isn't doing it, or Sting's, you know, the filter on Sting's voice isn't doing it any favors. Modulation.
I mean, this is a song I really like. It is, I agree with you, Chris, that it does stand out a little bit in terms of the, not just the tempo, but the sort of attitude, I guess, with the other songs. That said, I think that's part of what I really like about it. I kind of like that they're like, okay, we're going to end this album with like a real barnstormer of a track and just like a song that feels like it's going to go off the rails any second. Like that to me is like really cool. And I actually kind of like that contrast with some of the other songs that are much more controlled and like well thought out. And it's almost like they said, okay, we're going to go back to our punk beginnings for the end, just to show people have that side. And like, let's see what happens. And it's kind of chaotic. And, you know, the vocal modulation, I guess I always just kind of saw it as like part and parcel of what they were trying to do with that song. like, I like that it, you know, the song is very much what the title suggests. It's about someone who doesn't, who is always on the move, and doesn't have time to stop and think. And that's kind of the approach to the songwriting, I think, as well for this one. So very much delivers what it promises. And I have a lot of respect for it for that reason.
All I have to say about that one is, those opening drums really blow my mind. I love the very start of that song, especially, just really grabs me.
So I'm going to assume, Randy, then you didn't go with this song for your King of Pain. So which song did you go with?
So we talked about how this album, it, in a sense, is a bag of scraps. We've got a lot of different voices getting the songwriting credits. And, you know, I'm about to reveal my choice. And I think we were able to use this segment to just fully demonstrate the range of tastes and vibes the album gets here. Because I swear this is not a stunt. But I picked as my least favorite track, "The Bed's Too Big Without You," as my least favorite. I do not hate this song. I think it's great. In something that will be sacrilegious to any Police fan who is here with us right now, something that I liked more than this one, but is surprisingly low on my list as well, because I know it's like a top tier Police song for almost everyone, and it's a great song. I'm not nearly as high on Walking on the Moon as some people are. And I think they're different songs, but something they have in common is like, it's like this certain groove that they're trying to capture. And for whatever reason with like my tastes or my vibe, it's not fully sucking me in consistently to that vibe. I'm not making the emotional connection. I don't think that's on the Police. I think that's just whatever it is I'm looking for the music. Like some of what reads as silly on any other day is feeding into like this sense of like subversion that I find really interesting, like a theme I've seen over and over again in other music that makes it hit a little bit differently for me. But I think, again, we're just kind of capturing what's so special about this band. Like they can jam, they can groove, they can do reggae, they can do their version of punk, and they do it all so effectively. They're all such great musicians. And I've got to qualify mine as well. Like I am down with that song, "The Bed's Too Big Without You," especially, like I said, some of those live versions where I was really getting to stop and appreciate what was happening on guitar and bass and all of these. And even just hearing you break it down and point out some of the sounds and tones that work for you, I think I've got some new dimensions to look for the next time I hear it. So I certainly did not come in here actually down on that song, because this is probably my favorite Police album. But yeah, it did technically land at the bottom of my list for those reasons. So these guys can capture a full range of potential fans. I love it.
No, I have to be honest. I don't know if we've ever had a true inversion of these two categories before doing podcasts together. So that's quite the honor for the two of us, I think. I think that's really funny. But like you said, it is emblematic of our mm-hmm. tastes and the kinds of things that vibe with us, you know, individually.
Right, right.
So it's a beautiful thing.
That's a fun conversation to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's we'll see. We'll see what happens for the rest of the albums. But for now, let's go on to our next category. This is our do-do-do-do and our da-da-da-da, because it's time to our favorite lyrics. I'm going to go back to Randy for this one, for your favorite lyrics from this album.
All right. So I'm going to cheat here a little bit. I lost my precious notes for a second there, but I've got them back. You know, I had my song on Any Other Day here again. I'm not going to linger on it, though, because Chris pointed out that he also appreciates the lyric, "The cups and plates are in a conspiracy. I'm covered in misery." What I love about that line and on Any Other Day so much is just this like domesticated life, like the cups and plates or something I picture is stacked so perfectly, neatly. Like I've got this sense of control over my life, but really there's chaos. But in the interest of hitting some more songs, I'm going to go with my number two choice, which is a line from "Does Everyone Stare?" "I'm going to write you a sonnet, but I don't know where to start. I'm so used to laughing at the things in my heart." And the reason that this line really works for me, it's not so much the sonnet part. That kind of sounds like sappy, recycled. I don't know what love is, so maybe it's a sonnet, because supposedly those are romantic. But it's really that second half. I'm so used to laughing at the things in my heart. You know, like we're in the 80s. We've got like these big bands. We've got not necessarily a lot of like vulnerability of the men. But I love this idea of this lyric evoking someone who is being vulnerable, admitting to like being afraid of their feelings and emotions. And I thought that was really cool for me. I like that vibe for this album, for this time period. So, yeah, I'm so used to laughing at the things in my heart. That's my lyric.
Well, Randy, I'm glad that you went with those, because I also went with those same lyrics from the same song. I also include the next two lines in addition to the ones that you did. Last of all, I'm sorry because you never asked for this. I can see I'm not your type and my shot will always miss, which is a refrain that recurs through the rest of the song, through the beginning and middle of the song. This whole song is kind of this great distillation of like what it's like, the anxiety that comes from sort of first love, not quite knowing what to do with it. I hear this song and I'm like transported back to the awkward days of high school and trying to figure that out with all the unrequited loves and like trying to ask girls on dates and that kind of thing. And this song just brings all that back. So thanks, Sting, for that. Or I should say Stewart, because he's the writer of the song. But I really like how these lines kind of give particular insight into this narrator, right? He has this very intense feeling. I'm going to write you a sonnet, but I don't know where to start. Intense feeling, doesn't know how to articulate it, right? A universal challenge, I think. And then I'm so used to laughing at things in my heart, which I think Randy, you know, explicated quite effectively. You know, this is someone who's feeling that way. It's maybe new that he's starting to take this seriously. And then the, you know, you never asked for this. I can see I'm not your type. Like, there's just such a self-fulfilling prophecy about it, which I find kind of funny. Like, it's like he is his own worst enemy in this situation. And that kind of grounds this whole thing. It doesn't just feel like an exercise in misery. It feels very universal, very human. And I just also have to say, in this section, I was looking at it and it's like, you know, there's something about these words that really jump out to me. Most of these in this particular section, it's mostly monosyllables. There's only a few lines that a few words that are more than one syllable long. And it just gives you this feeling like all these feelings running together. I just think that's really, you know, that's really effective in terms of, you know, in terms of the lyrics, of just getting us to feel that even in the sounds of the words and not even the words themselves. So there's a lot going on here. I think there's a lot about this particular person. I think a lot of the other lyrics are funny too, but this was just something where I'm like, okay, we're starting to get a little bit deeper. So that's why I went with that.
After that inversion, did we just achieve synchronicity?
Wow. You know, I don't think this podcast is going to get any better than that. So might as well quit now.
Well, let me get to synchronicity too, because I also picked this song. For my
now we've achieved it.
Da-da-da.
Oh man.
But however, I picked different lyrics. I guess according to you, I went with the, you know, more funnier lyrics. I just love kind of how you mentioned, Justin. He's already like, you know, he's already saying like, oh, this isn't gonna work out before he even does anything. Like he says, I break into a cold sweat, reaching for the phone. I let it ring twice before I chicken out and decide you're not at home. Just a very funny visual. And I'm just picturing him be like, oh, no, I can't do it. And then I love the line a little bit later. I never noticed the size of my feet until I kicked you in the shins. What an odd thing to focus on very specific things and like how things could go wrong. And, you know, it feels very like adolescent, but I definitely like felt that stuff before as well too, where like everything is like super, you know, like you're hyper aware of things that probably no one else is paying attention to, but you know, you're so nervous and anticipating that something will go wrong that, you know, I'm kicking you in the shins when it's probably more like, you know, not something that maybe she even noticed. So I just like the way that it was shared and could definitely relate to it. And I guess we all could relate to it, which is why we picked those lyrics.
I mean, and also I just love how in the song when he's talking about the, you know, kicking this person in the shins, it's I never noticed the size of my feet And there's a little bit of a, you know, there's a little bit of a breath there before he gets to the next line. And you're just kind of like, wait, what? Like, it just adds this other level of, like, you know, ridiculousness to what we're hearing. I just think that's really, I think that's kind of funny too, that he breaks those, you know, he breaks those up as separate lines. But yeah, so, you know, Stewart reaching back into, you know, into some older material when he was not even an adult yet. And I think the song kind of reflects that. So I think it's pretty effective in that regard. But guys, we are now on the little thing they did that was magic, our favorite musical moment. It's finally here. And man, the police did us no favors in giving us way too many choices. This was a devil to try to narrow down for me. So, but I'm not going to go quite just yet. I'm actually going to go back to Chris for this one, for your favorite musical moment. What was the little thing they did that was magic to you?
I think the thing that was magical was Walking on the Moon is what I picked. And I know maybe originally the lyrics was Walking Around the Room, but it's a song that feels very atmospheric. You definitely get that kind of sense of floating with all the reverberating sounds and like emptiness, like it has an empty feel to it as well, or like a hollow feel. And I think a lot of builds that is Copeland's playing, mix of, you know, hi-hat playing and rim shots, really interesting play here. And I don't think he struck like the head more than like twice in the song. It was mostly just the rim shots and the hi-hats. So really interesting way for him to play. And, you know, as he was playing that stuff, I don't know how he did it, but like, you know, it really felt like, you know, the drum was really reverberating and like had the kind of vision of something like passing by you in space and continuing on and floating away. And so, yeah, just really enjoyed the way they played, and I really liked the fade out at the end as well, to feel like you're drifting off in space. So that was my magical moment.
Well, I should probably go next because I also went with Walking on the Moon. And, you know, I'm going to a very specific moment. It's one that's like etched in my brain. It was kind of a front runner even before I heard the album of a music moment. And it's the particular hi-hat break at the sort like toward the end of the song that Stewart does. And what it sounds like, and it always sounded like this to me, is a triplet. What I didn't realize until today is that what he's actually doing there, he is playing, but he's also using a delay effect unit, the Roland Space Echo. And so what you're getting is you're getting kind of triplet effect where like that third hit almost feels like it's starting to fade a little bit. So he is playing in a virtuosic manner. I don't want to take that away from him, but he's not quite doing what you're hearing, if that makes any sense. So he's kind of, frankly, this is something I love about a lot of progressive rock music, which certainly Stewart has, you know, experience with. It's that the marriage of new technology and the sort of old, like fundamental, like technical proficiency that I think he's managing to marry here. And yeah, like you said, Chris, it's filling this space. And it comes at like a time when, you know, we've gotten the chorus at least twice now, and just is kind of like almost like just kind of lets the song breathe, but also experiment a little bit. I mean, I love that you've got that very regular sounding triplet, and then it's getting all these little taps at the same time. And again, that's a combination of him hitting it in rapid succession, but also the delay. You know, I always wondered like how he was doing it, and then I actually watched a drummer recreate that, and I was realizing, oh wow, it's not quite what I imagined, but it's still, it doesn't matter because it still has the same effect. So yeah, that moment to me, I mean, you know, I've got a couple of honorable mentions, which maybe I'll, you know, after we do this particular section, I'll bring those up. But this is the one that just, I'm like, this has to be it for me. So that's for me, the hi-hat break, Walking on the Moon. And of course, last but not least, Randy, your musical moment.
Awesome. Before I hit my moment, I just want to jump in. You know, even though Walking on the Moon is not necessarily like my number one on this album, it really does work for me because, you know, it still actually made it into my list of possible lyrics for the day. And the reason why is that atmospheric sound, Chris, that you were describing, and all those tricks, Justin, that you brought up, they really made me feel the line, my feet don't hardly make no sound walking on the moon. Because it can really just capture like any moment or place or time where you are feeling like disconnected, disassociated from what is like going on. Like if I'm not feeling emotionally present, and that's kind of like a little bit of an emotional in I do have to that song. It does capture that sort of weightlessness. Now, I've got two musical moments, and I think I'm going to do both of them, because the first one, I'm going to be curious to know if I discovered something cool here or if I'm just being a newbie Police fan and this is just something everyone knows and therefore not that exciting. And then I've got another one that's more technical, and I want to end with that one because when it becomes clear that I don't know what I'm talking about, you guys can jump in because I do not play guitar, and you can probably help out and help me better articulate what I'm going for. But the first one is going back to our favorite song, Does Everyone Stare? So are you guys familiar with the little opera sample in there?
So at the
beginning of this song, we're hearing like the original demo recording from Stuart Copeland. And I saw this detail online and I was like, is that really true? This does not like seem like it could possibly be true. So I went digging. And I found this excerpt from Musician magazine from 1981. It was this really in-depth interview with the band right around when they released Ghost in the Machine. But they were kind of getting into the whole background of the band, some of these different instrumental tricks that they were using. Like at one point, Andy's talking about a similar sort of like delay feature he's using for the guitar, like some synthesizers on stage where he can duplicate some sounds. But as far as Does Everyone Stare goes, you get this little opera sample, and here's how Stuart Copeland described what happened. He says, I recorded the demo for that at home. I had a little home studio at the time with wires going everywhere. I think I was running the guitar through the toaster, that sort of thing. And I was playing the piano part while I sang the song, or at least what was supposed to be the lyrics of the song. And just as I finished singing, all the wires in the room acted like a radio and picked up a signal of this opera. It was perfectly in time and perfectly in tune. Even the mood and sentiment of the thing were absolutely perfect. So it went straight on tape, exactly in the place that it should have gone. It had to be a message from above that this was the way the song had to go. So we actually used that, my home demo, at the beginning of the studio recording. Yeah, so when I read that detail, that blew my mind on so many levels, because you know me, I love the weird little quirks. So I was like, oh, okay, that's a cool little opera moment, you know, like maybe it's a counterpoint to like the lack of confidence that this person has, and I'm trying to assign all this meaning to it, and it turns out to be this weird happy accident because Stuart Copeland is tinkering with wiring, you know, in his own home. You know, it reminds me of that piano note on Roxanne that you mentioned last time, Justin, the way they incorporated accidents into their music, just blew my mind. Do you guys have any thoughts on that little operatic moment? I know it wasn't planned magic, but they were smart enough to use it.
I had wondered about that and, appreciate that additional context. Cause yeah, I think it goes pretty well with the song, and it's like a interesting transition between like it's interesting like that thing starts off when he starts off singing, like it sounds very like timid, and then like you have that transition and then it goes to him kind of singing maybe more normal. So yeah, I thought that was a interesting thing that they added there, and yeah, didn't really have the context for that, so that's funny that he was doing enough there to pick up a signal, and it just happened to be that. That's a pretty happy circumstance.
Yeah, God, you know, I'm learning so much about all these accidents that I'm just assuming are totally intentional. Be like, wow, that's brilliant. And frankly, you know, the two that we've brought up so far, I'm pretty sure there are many more. So like when I hear the song, I'm like kind of always looking forward to that moment because it always struck me as like, oh, okay, they're incorporating a little bit of, you know, other sound into this. Like that works for me. And just assumed it was totally intentional.
Absolutely. And I just want to throw my second one in there because I think it'll probably make a natural transition into what I know the next question is you're going to have for us, Justin, about other songs on this album. And I've just got to talk about the main riff on Message in a Bottle. You know, like this is one of like the all holy Police songs. Like when I came to you guys as a newbie, it was like I knew Roxanne very well. I knew Message in a Bottle very well. I knew every little thing she does is magic. I think that might be the holy trinity of Police songs for people who don't know the Police. Like you probably are at least aware of those three, whether or not you care or whether or not you want to be aware. But this riff on Message in a Bottle is just incredible, and I love it. But the thing that put it over the top for me is I found myself watching a similar video to what Justin was talking about with the drums earlier about this riff. You know, and it was a guitar player who does a lot of online videos, and he was kind of talking about how like the chords that people play to this riff don't feel quite right to this really famous riff, this iconic riff. And, you know, he had some little tech tools in front of him. He started, you know, breaking down and isolating the notes. And he started to talk about how there's this basic chord, but then we've got this harmony on a different fret and it's overdubbed and it creates this full, deep, rich sound that's really just particularly mesmerizing and engaging that like just even a pretty skilled guitarist who picks up some tabs is not going to capture all that dimension. And then separately to reading that same magazine article I mentioned about Andy talking about his pedals and how he can overlay different notes and start to get more and more of that effect on stage, like a little mini version of what he's doing in the studio. That just really means a lot to me. And I mean, that opening riff from Message in a Bottle, like that's got to be one of the first things most people think of when they think of this band. So it really is magical.
Yeah, I mean, kind of like Roxanne, it is one of the songs that is probably one of the most played. I've probably heard it a million times, but I gotta say, it just doesn't get old for me. Like, I think it's because it's so driving. The riff is great. The drumming is incredible. Like, it's maybe, I don't know, it might be like one of, if not Stewart's best work with the Police. It's like certainly in the conversation. And part of the reason for that is because, I mean, you mentioned guitar overdubs. There's a ton of drum overdubs on the song. So what you're hearing again is not necessarily what he was playing. He wasn't playing that, you know, from start to finish kind of thing. Obviously in concert he was able to do that, but you know, the recording is different, you know. And then just like, you know, the ending of it, like, and I did want to ask you guys about this. We didn't really bring it up as a lyric, but I'm curious how you two feel about the end of the song with all these bottles that have washed up on the shore. Seems I'm not alone in being alone. How do you see that? Do you see that as a hopeful thing? Do you see it as just like, oh, there's all like the suffering is not limited to this one island. There's all these other islands with suffering. Like, how do you see that? Do you see a connection there? Like, I'm curious how you guys read the ending of that song.
Probably more of the second. Like, I don't necessarily see it as hopeful, but like, hey, like here I am like complaining about being lonely and join the club is essentially what all those balls are saying. So, yeah, I don't necessarily see it as hopeful, but, you know, maybe acknowledging there's some solace in being alone, I guess, with others. Misery loves company.
I've got to echo Chris on that one. I think it's more the latter. I think it's more cynical, but not without a sense of humor. However folks feel about Sting, I don't think there's anyone who would deny that he's an incredibly talented artist. I don't think there's anyone who would deny that he's a really talented songwriter. I think if you're going to make accusations against Sting, you know, there are times in his career where you could call him a little bit self-indulgent, etc. But he does always have a sense of humor about himself. I'm not saying that he can't get angry or lose that. I have this like cynical view of the world, but also in a way, like, we could also then, like, you know, sit back and have a drink together about this. Like, yeah, you know, like, life can be difficult. Life can be tough. We all have these needs and these wants and this desperation, and maybe we're not always going to be heard. But there is a sense of humor about this. Yeah, I love that. Love that reading, Chris. Thank you.
I was going to say, while we're on the song, one of the things I picked up that I never noticed before was you mentioned the drumming. And maybe these are overdubbed, but it's interesting how, like, in each verse, he's, like, adding something onto it or changing something. So, you know, in the second verse, he's bringing in kind of the bass drum, like the beats in quick succession that, you know, you didn't hear on the first verse. And then in the third verse, kind of brings in the hi-hats more. So it's really interesting to hear that. You know, I've heard the song so many times, and I guess I was never really listening to it for that. And it was interesting that probably the 100th time I've heard it and finally picking up on that. So it's always funny to think about, like, you can still discover things even after you've heard something hundreds of times.
Were there any other songs that you guys wanted to, because there's a bunch that we didn't talk about, if we wanted to do brief mentions of a few of them. So are there any ones that jump out to you that maybe deserve a little more love?
I mean, I am going to jump out and just say, I can't believe none of us picked a favorite lyric from the title track, Regatta de Blanc, with our EOs, you know, what a fun song, what a fun way. Thank you. I mean, what a fun way to, like, open a concert or a show. It's got a build. You know, that's a Grammy winning song for, you know, like, best rock instrumental performance. And while there's maybe not much to latch on to lyrically, it really is fun. And it's got such a great dramatic, theatrical sort of build. It would be a shame not to mention that one for sure.
Interesting you mentioned, like, being part of a concert. I think it kind of spawned from, if I'm not mistaken, they were kind of inserting into the bridge of Can't Stand Losing You, or at least, you know, kind of a version of it that they probably built off of that became the song. And I definitely can see parts of it that have that Can't Stand Losing You feel. But then I think they kind of make it their own. But yeah, I like this song a lot. It was one of the many ones in contention for Loved It Since I Knew It. And so, yeah, definitely a song that was on my mind for mentioning. So I'm glad you brought it up. One other one I want to mention, and you kind of touched on this a little bit, Justin, but It's All Right for You. You kind of mentioned in the beginning the more, you know, like, clearer punk songs, but, you know, it still has that reggae feel in between the vocals of the song, but definitely has that in your face punk sound with the sharp, you know, short, sharp vocals of Sting. And we also mentioned Copeland plays rhythm guitar and bass on this song, which I thought was interesting. So Sting is just singing for this song. And I really like the guitar work in the solo, some nice, you know, wailing slide going on there, and really cool outro. Definitely wouldn't be surprised if they had, you know, layered guitar and drums in that outro, because a lot of stuff going on there. I'm not sure I followed everything there, but it sounds awesome.
Yeah, that one's always been a favorite of mine. I remember when I was younger, that was like the one that was, if I wanted a police song to pump me up, that was the one I listened to. Just always really liked that one. I also want to give some love to Death Wish, the fifth track on the album, which is very kind of, I don't know, sinewy and almost like a little bit eerie. It's got this very consistent riff to it, but there's, again, all these, like, little changes that Andy's doing with the guitar. I think that's really fascinating. And it's kind of, song suggests, it's kind of about someone who is all of a sudden feeling this urge to, you know, I guess do what Christopher Walken wants to do in Annie Hall and just veer into the oncoming lane. And then I also wanted to talk about Contact, which is, I think, a very fun song. I really love the bass line in it. It's a little evil sounding. Always, you know, if you don't know already, I kind of respond to that very much. But also the breaks in that song are really cool. Like, it just, you know, you go from this pretty, like, sort of dour verse to, you know, to a chorus, and then you get these like kind of little breaks in between where you're really, you know, seeing the band kind of jamming a little bit. I think that's just a really cool song in the back half of the album. So
I've got to second that. It's on my list of Stuart Copeland written songs from this album. And it's got that, just like that weird sort of quirk that he's bringing to the table. They recently just released some remastered Clark Kent songs from Stuart's early days. So I might pick those up and give them a listen. And I can probably get more of that vibe as well. My only other thing was we briefly mentioned No Time This Time. I just wanted to say I love in that chorus the way it feels like it's almost climbing up and then like free falling when the bass kicks in. I love that sort of like rise and fall in that song. It's a really fun thing.
So guys, I guess we'll leave it there. If it's not clear already, we are definitely fans of this album, although apparently have differing opinions on certain songs. That's what's fun about doing this. But let's talk about other artists we've been listening to. And I think I'm going to start us off this time. This is an artist that I really enjoy, and I've been listening to a lot more of his stuff than I have, and that's Al Green. People are not familiar, is a soul singer. You know, he's been active, I guess, for, you know, probably since the late 60s, but he's probably best known for his stuff from the late 60s and early 70s, I would say. I just always loved the character of this guy's voice. I know that he's very known for his falsetto that pops up a lot in his songs. He's probably best known for the song Let's Stay Together, very memorably used in the movie Pulp Fiction, if anyone has seen that one. But I think the song that I've really gravitated toward and will just kind of seek out and is a good starting place for him is the song I'm Still in Love with You. Because this to me is a song that captures that feeling and love of, you know, when you're in love with someone, not necessarily that you're falling in love. It's almost like you've already fallen in love. And the revelation that you have this in your life is something that just hits you in that moment. Almost like it's rising out of your gut or something. That's how I feel about it. It's a feeling that I've, you know, have had. I would certainly love to have again. I don't know, you know, I don't know if my two co-hosts know what I'm talking about, but I hope they do. I just think that he's able to capture that in this song where, you know, which is like the song suggests, you know, just kind of basking in that feeling. And I just love that at a certain point, the words almost just fade away and it's just, we're just getting Green's falsetto. It's almost like words are just not adequate enough anymore. And it's just this joyous sound. Man, sometimes certain artists just are able to capture something and just like I said, in the gut, like that's how it feels to me listening to Al Green. You know, I learned a little bit more about him. I didn't realize that his personal life was so volatile. You know, certainly some things about him that I would say, oh, maybe not a person to emulate. But in terms of the music, it is something that, you know, that I really respond to and am really thankful for. But let me go to my co-host and I'll go to Randy next for what artists you've been listening to.
All right. So first, I just want to say Al Green is such a great, great mention. Such richness and emotion to that singing voice. Just absolutely love it. You know, last time I went to kind of a quirky singer-songwriter in Jonathan Richman. And today I'm going very mainstream. You know, as I may have mentioned on the podcast, I'm a father. I've been a father for over 9 years now, which means I've really fallen off of a lot of popular music. So I'm not exactly digging deep into the recesses of music history to give you someone you've never heard of before. But just so I can figure out how to phrase my little spiel here, do either of you guys have a relationship with the artist Saint Vincent?
I'm familiar, and I think I've heard maybe a few songs, but not overly familiar.
Yeah, so I maybe partly inspired by Stuart Copeland this month. I've been trying to get back to my alternative rock sort of roots. And I mean, the kind of the face of alternative rock for the last decade or so has probably been Saint Vincent as kind of the leader. So I've just been going back and getting into some of what, you know, Saint Vincent, Ann Clark, Annie Clark, you know, going by many names, has been into. And she's just been right on the periphery of my musical life for a long time without me realizing it. back when I was still in college, listening to like a lot of indie-ish folk rock, you know, like little did I know that she had a brief run with the Polyphonic Spree, which is like an ultimate like mid-2000s sort of alt band, which I guess is still technically together, a large ensemble. She did this really phenomenal collaboration with David Byrne, Love This Giant, which is just a really cool blend. And I love that for her because she is kind of like this funky sort of weirdo artist, you know, who idolized people like Bowie and Kate Bush. And to see her out there with David Byrne making like just these cool, quirky videos are great. I know I don't have time to run you through her whole discography here. Now, it was not her first album, but the self-titled album is just really phenomenal stuff. It's got some incredibly like heavy beats and some lyrics that would not be uncomfortable on a Police album. She's dealing a lot with like this sort of disengagement we have in this digital age. You know, there's the song Digital Witness. There with lyrics like people turn the TV on, it looks just like a window. People turn the TV on and throw it out the window. Get back to your stare. Like that sounds like something I could hear on a Police album, you know, or like the song Birth in Reverse, like a birth in reverse in America. Like just these little slightly subverting sort of lyrics, questioning like what we value and what we might be losing in ourselves. And just the last thing I'll say, I've got this very untrained musical ear beyond appreciation. And like, I think so much of what I thought she was doing was based on digital effects, but she is an incredibly accomplished guitarist. I think it was maybe Rolling Stone or I should have checked this fact. You know, listed her as maybe like the 26th greatest guitarist of all time. And some of what I thought was digital effects was just her like shredding on the guitar with like heavy, heavy distortion, just creating some really cool stuff. So she's worth spending some time with, especially that self-titled album. If you're someone catching up on the alt rock scene like me.
Yeah, she's definitely been someone I've been meaning to check out. And I believe it was Rolling Stone. I can't I don't remember the exact placement, but it was alarmingly high. And I just say that as like, oh, interesting. Like, it's just, to be honest, it just shows that everyone's definition of what makes a great guitarist is different. Not necessarily better or worse, just different, right? That's really cool. Yeah, I didn't realize that distortion was a big part of her guitar playing, so that's pretty cool. Especially as a big metal fan, I'm a huge fan of distortion. So yeah, I don't know. Chris, have you heard of St. Vincent at all?
I'm ashamed to say I haven't. But
okay,
you know, I wrote it down on my music to do list.
Gotcha.
So you know, my wife would be very mad at me if I didn't mention that Saint Vincent also co-wrote "Cruel Summer" with Taylor Swift, the world's most famous musician at this time.
Someday, probably when all the hoopla's died down, I will finally like do a deep dive on Taylor Swift. But Chris, for now at least, I'm gonna guess you've not been listening to Taylor Swift, or have you?
No, I was not going to bring up Taylor Swift. But on the theme of talented guitarists, the artist I've been listening to is Van Halen, American hard rock band in the 70s, 80s, and I'm going to mostly ignore everything after 85. I can't say I'm the biggest Sammy Hagar fan, but I do love me some David Lee Roth. One of the best like rock vocalist, in my opinion, just oozes charisma. You know, he may not play, you know, another instrument, but man, his voice is just so distinct. And I just love his, I guess, shrieks, if you will. Like he has that special, and speaking of distinctive, I mean, I can't think of anyone who has a more distinct sound than Eddie Van Halen. He has that, you know, finger tapping technique that he uses, and he has highly customized, you know, guitars to make very distinct sounds. And it's one of those things where I can hear, you know, notes playing, and I know that that's Eddie Van Halen. So, yeah, definitely, you know, two of the two people in the band who, you know, stand out the most to me. And just to highlight A few of the songs, especially been listening to their 1984 album. I think they did a good job of pairing kind of the guitar driven nature that they've had from their past several albums with the introduction to synthesizers. Hugely felt on the album. You think of the hits like Jump and I'll Wait that are heavily synth driven. You also have other hits like Panama and Hot for Teacher that, you know, easily make the best of, would make like their best of albums. But they also have some ones that may not make the, might not be at the top, but I think are excellent hard jams of Girl Gone Bad and House of Pain. Really heavy, you know, kind of bordering on metal in those songs, and really some fantastic gems amongst all the other hits. So definitely recommend, if you haven't listened to the album all the way through, you'll hear some classics and you'll hear some stuff that maybe will, further pique your interest.
Yeah. I mean, Chris and I kind of grew up listening to them. I remember kind of getting into them a little bit later than maybe some of the other classic rock bands that our parents were listening to. But yeah, I just, you know, especially once I started listening to each of the albums, it's like, wow, there's so many other songs, you know, apart from what's on the greatest hits that are getting, you know, Chris, for me, Girl Gone Bad is like one of their most underrated. Like, I just absolutely adore that song. I love the way it begins. Like, it's very threatening throughout. You know, every time we get that like great strum from Eddie, I just think that's kind of amazing. Also, like, Fair Warning, I feel like gets a bad rap, and I don't know why, because I think it's so good. Their fourth album, it was a little bit of a change, I guess, for them from the more sort of party sort of driven stuff before it. You know, but I don't think I like the album before that, Women and Children First, as much as, or Van Halen too, as much as I like Fair Warning. You know, and there's so many good ones on that one. You know, you've got Mean Streets and Dirty Movies, Unchained. I actually also, another underrated that's mostly a synth driven song, Sunday Afternoon in the Park, is just really unlike anything else they've done, and just really has a cool vibe to it. Like, again, kind of threatening sounding. So I guess, you know, I don't know. I guess I like that stuff in music. What can I say? I just think they do that really well in addition to everything else. So yeah, definitely a band that if you think you know them, there's so many other songs you'd be like, oh wow, they have this too. You know, Secrets from Diver Down is a really good song and is very much not like Panama or Running with the Devil or any of that stuff. Like, it's a very different song. Yeah, there's a lot of things to explore, even just in the Roth era. You know, the Hagar stuff, yeah, it just doesn't quite hit me the same way. I'll give a brief shout out to a bonus song from the last album they did with Hagar, which I actually quite like, a song called Crossing Over. That's definitely a good one. Some interesting fade techniques there on the guitar. Yeah, so definitely a fan. I'm really happy to hear you bring them up. But Randy, I'm going to assume that you're familiar with Van Halen.
I am, not with the intimacy of my co-host here, but you know, like I know the hits, I know the sound, and like, if I want to just kind of, if I'm just in the mood to rock out, you know, like, that's one of the bands that like, that just has to pop into your mind right away. I've got to say, it's been a while since I've really sat down and consciously listened to a lot of Van Halen, but I think I'm overdue, so I appreciate the reminder.
Always happy to help. But guys, I guess we should probably wind things down now. Chris, I guess we'll be hearing you on this podcast, as well as we can find you on Podwork Angels, which I'll plug in a minute. And but Randy, where can we find your stuff online?
All right. If you want to find me on social media and correct any of my takes on the Police, you can find me over on Twitter at Mr_Elaine. I've also got a link to Blue Sky over there, which I'm enjoying. It's been a healthy environment. You've got some control over your algorithm. And you can also find me largely on the television section of the Pop Break website. You know, in recent months, I was covering some Doctor Who back around the holidays, some Fargo. season five, which is about to air its finale as we record this, but we'll be done for a bit by the time this comes out. So I hope future me is loving that finale of Fargo. It's been a phenomenal season of television, so definitely consider checking it out. You can hop right into season five. It's an anthology show, and you'll have a great time.
And I've actually not only been keeping up with the show, but I've also been reading your reviews, Randy. Although I think I still need to read. I think I just finished reading your one in episode five.
Yeah, and I'm looking at nine on my computer right now, almost ready to go. So
great. Yeah, I'm a little bit behind. I just finished episode eight. So just two more to go. But yeah, I've been enjoying the season, and it's been a nice refreshment after season four, as I think I've mentioned before. So yeah, going to look forward to not just watching it, but also reading your continued thoughts on the series.
Thank you so much for taking a minute to read those. I appreciate it.
Oh, of course. I was watching it, and my routine is, I usually, if there's a show that I'm watching and I know that AV Club has reviewed it, then reading their stuff. And then I was like, wait, I know Randy's writing about this stuff for the Pop Break. I'm going to read that too. So yeah, that was
Well, don't worry, because this week I get into Macbeth and Kurt Vonnegut. So
oh, fantastic. Yeah, so great. As for me, at thecinemaverick.com, that's my website. I'm also on Letterboxd at thecinemaverick. You can see all the 2022 movies that I'm still watching. And you can check out our podcast, Pod on the Rooftops and Pod Rock Angels, The Rush Hour, on thepopbreak.com as part of the Pop Break Today feed. You can also find us pretty much anywhere you find podcasts on that particular feed. There's a lot of shows that are on there, but we are, like I said, Pod Rock Angels and Pod on the Rooftops are the two previous ones. And also just mention, by the time that this goes up, I will have some tens of some of my favorite bands on my website. I may post them on social media, but then maybe do a little bit more for the website. So I currently have two ready to go. I have Rush that I did as part of the podcast, which I'll be posting. And then the other one is on the band that I talked about last time, Nirvana. I narrowed down my top 10 songs. Surprisingly easy and difficult, if such a thing is possible. But yeah, you can see, you know, what my favorite songs were. Some of them surprised me and others totally didn't. I also will have, as I did for Rush, I'll have my favorite song in each album. There was only three albums, so there's not a ton to go there, but I also will rank the albums. So I'll rank all three albums, and I'm going to guess the order is not going to surprise anybody, but but I will do it all the same. As much as I am doing it for anyone who's seeing this, I'm particularly doing it for Randy. So just wanted to mention that.
Can't thank you enough for that.
But guys, for now, I guess this is our, yep, this will be our third goodbye.